You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Monday, 21 October. This weekend was the anniversary of the 1987 U.S. collapse. The Dow Jones down 22.6%, the worst down day ever. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Nkunza from Sanlam Private Wealth, Standard Bank, Pick and Pay, both put out a trading update. We're going to chat with Martin Ackerman from Citadel, look ahead to next week's midterm budget policy statement, and then Christo DeWitt from Luno. Crypto and tax. You got crypto, you pay tax. What are the nuances? This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb. Discovery and TymeBank are taking market share, but who's losing? Numbers of customers and transactional activity is but one set of metrics. Business Day, Renogen warns of wider interim loss. Company cited reduced production time for helium and LNG during the commissioning phase. Morning markets. The US was green on Friday. S&P up 0.4%. NASDAQ 0.2% higher. The East is mostly red. Sydney is down 0.1%. Tokyo is up 1/3. Hong Kong is down 0.3% and 10 cent off 1.1%. Commodities mostly green. Gold, 2,747. Brent is your red at 73.23. Platinum, 1,031. Palladium, 1,093. The Rand, 17.59. Bitcoin, 68,800. And top 40, 10 points down. That, I think we can call it a flat open.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Today now with Nick Kunza from Sanlam Private Wealth. Nick, appreciate the early morning time. Banks, we got a nine-month update from Standard Bank. This because, of course, they have to provide information to ICBC, who own, I think, some 20%. And all in all, I mean, once again, these banks are the numbers are good. I mean, they're not knocking it out the park, but all things considered, these are good numbers.
Yeah, they are. Good morning, Simon. Really gentle. You know, you look at the financial markets, and we said this a few times when we chat. You know, markets, financial markets, and certainly financial shares tend to lead markets, obviously for all the reasons we know. You know, credit and borrowing and all the rest of it. So, I mean, this paints a pretty healthy picture of the areas they operate in, and Standard Bank having the biggest footprint on Africa, I think, bodes pretty well. And if you drill down just quickly into some of the sort of headline numbers, I mean, you know, single-digit PEs, dividend yields are over 6%, and growth nearing double digits. So I think overall, nothing to get worried about in the slightest if Standard Bank are concerned.
Yeah, absolutely. And interesting, now, I was having a look, you and I often chat JP Morgan. Their dividend yield is 2.2, which for us looks low, but for Americans, 2.2 is actually not a bad yield, although we typically expect more from our banks locally.
We do. And again, look at those American numbers. The U.S. banking season, the U.S. earnings season kicked off with the banks a week ago.
Yeah.
And those banks have been pretty good. Some of those shares are up, I think, Morgan Stanley 7% last week on the day that it reported. So again, also pointing quite a good picture of the U.S. economy as well.
Yeah, good point. Pick and Pay late Thursday came out with a trading update. I mean, the stock did actually sell off. I was a bit surprised because I suppose I was surprised that the market was surprised that it was another bit of a horror update.
Yeah, I mean, again, while we're surprised, they are battling against the likes of a ShopRite. You know, if you look at some of those headline numbers, you know, they are going to report a loss. And, you know, besides that Boxer spin-off, the rest of the business looks like it's actually struggling. And, you know, if you look at the margins as well, battling to compete. But and this is despite the fact they raised, why they raised $4 billion in a rights issue. You know, they need that money. But I just battle to see what the next step is. You know, the easy sort of work's been done. You know, they're closing stores. Mm-hmm. That's the easy thing, and cutting back costs. Now they've got to grow the business. And I think that's where the hard work begins for Mr. Summers.
And the story now in Pick and Pay really is all about that Boxer, surely. I mean, everyone wants Boxer at this point, and as soon as that comes, I mean, I sense there's going to be a bunch of folks saying, thanks, but no, it's Boxer we want.
Yeah, I agree. And where to from now? You know, what next? You know, what is the business? Are we going to be talking about Boxer on its own, or are we going to be talking about Pick and Pay as a whole? I suspect all the interest is going to be in Boxer, and Pick and Pay's got a lot of work to do.
Yeah, I think it certainly has. We'll leave it there, Nick Kunza. Sunline Private Wealth, appreciate the early morning time. Our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter, is about that update. Are you holding the stock? And if you are holding it, is it basically for the Boxer? I mean, my sense is that, you know, anyone in Pick and Pay right now is there because they want the Boxer shares, because there's not much else that's looking positive. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. The Standard Flexible Income Fund delivers capital preservation and consistent top quartile inflation beating returns. Let your money keep working with Standard Asset Management even after you retire.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Martin Ackerman, Chief Economist at Citadel. Martin, appreciate the time. We've got the midterm budget policy statement from our finance minister due on the 30th, which is a Wednesday. We should be getting some good news in this particular budget statement, if only maybe a little bit better on the growth front.
Yes, definitely. I think, you know, we've been blessed since the elections that there's been a lot of positive sentiment in the country. And I think the budget will continue to be part of that. If we just think about some of the numbers that the government talked about in terms of economic growth, yesterday the president himself said that they are hoping or targeting a 3% growth. Mm-hmm. Now, remember, in February, the growth for 2025 was set at about 1.7. So we're talking almost double that. That is going to make a huge difference in terms of all your metrics relative to economic growth, relative to GDP. But having said all of that, we always need to keep in mind the budget is looking forward. And there need to be a note of caution that if next year this time we don't start to see those returns or those results rather, then, you know, all of the sentiment is probably going to fall flat.
It's a good point. I mean, some of it, you know, if Eskom can keep our lights on, that's definitely a winner. Inflation's down, interest rates hopefully continue coming down. But the big one perhaps is the government of national unity. Lots of positive talk, but to your point, it's still early days. But in a year's time, we need to start actually seeing the fruits on the ground.
Yes, and they focus on the right things. You know, we know that there's urgency in, call it, the logistical network that needs to be sorted out. Mm-hmm. And if we do a couple of those things coming off a low base, we can definitely get to that high economic growth numbers. That will take a lot of pressure off not only the budget, but also in terms of treasury and the whole economy altogether, you know, ability to create more jobs, which I think is so important at this point.
Yeah, that perhaps is number one for our economy is jobs. And a better economy, of course, means more tax income, more revenue going to from SARS. Mm. Government bond yields are lower. So debt, as they're issuing new bonds, they're at a lower yield, which also gives a bit of wiggle room for Treasury.
Yeah, I think, you know, if we can get to that kind of economic growth, then definitely tax, without increasing the tax rate, you know, just where we are right now, it's going to give you a nice kicker in terms of the revenue coming in, which will take a lot of pressure off the government's needs to keep on borrowing. We know that we're very close to the limit that especially the foreign investors like us to be. And we had that, call it the golden foreign exchange reserves in February. That's about 100 billion that's now in the pipeline. So that will also make the numbers look better. But that's not unlimited pool that we can tap into. In fact, now with a stronger rand, that pool is actually a little bit smaller as well. So we need to get to the point where the tax side is actually balancing the equation so that we can actually in time reduce the requirement on our debt. That's on the income side. You know, obviously, there's still a lot that potentially can be done on cutting back on expenses that will also help the balancing act.
Yeah. And I've forgotten about that gold and foreign exchange contingency reserve account. We tapped it for 100 billion, but you make a great point. That was 100 billion with a much higher exchange rate. So maybe it's not quite the 100 billion. I mean, there is more money there. Is it something which they could look to tap again? Or is that really a case of rather say, you know what, we're going to do this in dire straits?
Yeah. So I think, you know, the intent in February was almost like it's a once off. You know, don't want to clear the whole account, have the safety and the ability for the Reserve Bank to keep tapping into that if need be. Mm-hmm. But like I've said, that's a foreign exchange account, so to speak. So now with the rand, you know, the ability is still there, but it's not unlimited. And also, you know, the reality is a lot of that money went into short-term expenses, covering some of the increases that we saw this year, a bit of a support to Transnet. if you tap into that reserve and you start doing, let's say, infrastructure development, so you're really investing in the economy for the next couple of decades, different story. But we can't tap into that just to plug the gaps in the budget. That's definitely not sustainable.
Yeah, I take your point. It needs to be sort of, you know, capital projects rather than salaries. Mm. Speaking of salaries, wage bill is still the big issue, I suspect.
Yes, yeah. So in terms of where they can really try and manage expenses, you know, you can't. Some of the other things are baked into the cake. If you talk about healthcare, yeah, education, policing, those kind of things, social grants, so important, you know, that cause unnecessary social tension if we can't pay or continue with that. Mm-hmm. So the wage bill is still one that it's sensitive, but, you know, we're sitting with one of the biggest wage bills in the OECD. And they do talk about, and they keep on talking about things like job freeze. So don't create, you know, if someone retires or resigns, don't replace. But the important thing is we're back at the table negotiating increases going forward. Most of the unions came at about 12%, government count at 3%. So there's still a long way to go. And, you know, the intent is to try and get it below inflation, because then over time you actually get the wage bill a little bit under control. So yes, 100%, that is one of the biggest challenges that they need to balance in this budget as well.
We'll leave it there. It's Martin Ackerman, Chief Economist, Citadel. Appreciate the time. Let your money weather the storms with Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in the Stanlib Global Select Fund, a diversified all-weather equity portfolio submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
I'm chatting with Christo de Wit, South African country manager at Luno. Tax is coming up. 21 October is D-Day for tax returns. I want to stress up front, neither Christo nor myself are tax experts. We are tax payers. Christo, I appreciate the time. One of the misconceptions around crypto, perhaps, is that blockchain transactions are anonymous and therefore we can evade tax obligations. They're not as anonymous as many think, and you can't evade tax obligations, even if they were completely anonymous.
No, absolutely right, Simon. We know crypto is a taxable asset. That means if you hold crypto, if you sell crypto, if you gain any kind of income or profit from crypto, then you are liable for tax on that. I think the big misconception that you rightfully mentioned it is the fact that a lot of people assume that cryptocurrency and cryptocurrency transactions are actually anonymous. Mm. But in fact, everything on the blockchain is recorded.
Yeah.
And with global exchanges becoming more compliant in terms of regulatory frameworks, exchanges have to comply with KYC requirements. So there is a person or a physical ID attached to that transaction or that wallet address. So it's not as anonymous as it previously had thought to be. And we know with crypto being declared a financial product in South Africa,
yeah,
it is seen by the regulator as a taxable asset.
And something which I hadn't thought about, but it makes perfect sense. A lot of folks will say, well, if I take my Bitcoin or my Ethereum and I move it into, you know, a fiat currency, let's say ZAR, well, that's the taxable event. But if I move between Bitcoin and Ethereum, that's still taxable, even though I didn't necessarily go into rands, because in essence, I've closed one position and opened a new one.
Absolutely right. And, you know, we've spoken to many tax experts during this tax season, and that is exactly what they're saying as well, that misconception that it's only when you exchange your crypto from a Bitcoin into a South African rand or vice versa, that becomes a taxable asset. But crypto-to-crypto movements are also seen by the regulator as a changing of position, and therefore, you know, tax is liable on that.
And the other one is trading versus being a holder, or whether we're talking crypto, so you'd be a hodler. And it's that, you know, if I do crypto old school. I buy it, I stick it in a wallet, and I kind of just forget about it, which means when I do so, it's going to be a capital gain. I've got my 40,000 Rand exclusion, a 40% inclusion rate. But those who are more actively trading, the money is made as income and therefore taxed as income, which is, in simple process, a higher rate.
No, absolutely. And I think one of the interesting things as well, that those two are not necessarily mutually exclusive.
Yeah.
So an individual can be, you know, the crypto that they hold can be both taxed under capital gains tax or under income tax, depending on how they hold onto that crypto and what the nature of the transaction is with that crypto. So for instance, if a taxpayer has a bunch of Bitcoin that he or she bought, you know, many, many years ago, it's just sitting there, not touching it, you know, the assumption is that eventually when that position is changed, then capital gains tax will be applicable on that. But then if Ethereum, on the other hand, and the Ethereum wallet is traded more frequently and more rapidly, then obviously the profits gain on those trades will be seen as income, and therefore income tax would be payable.
And a note that you guys put out along with your partners, talking around Ethereum, of course, now we've got Ethereum, which is a proof of stake rather than proof of work. And if I stake my Ethereum, I might have held that Ethereum for ever and a day. It's a capital nature. But the money earned from staking is going to be income. So even the same coin in the same sort of process will potentially be taxed differently.
Exactly. And I recently did a podcast with some tax consultants, and they use the analogy of the fruit and the tree, which is often, you know, often comes up in tax conversations. The Ethereum that you are staking, that bulk amount of Ethereum that you dedicate or allocate to the network, that can be seen as the tree, right? Mm-hmm. And that is capital in nature. But then the rewards that you generate on that the Ethereum staking rewards that are paid out is then seen as the fruit. And that can then be taxed under income tax. So there are a lot of complexities when it comes into crypto and tax. I think at the end of the day, what we always want to make sure our customers know is that crypto is a taxable asset, and that the taxpayer, the individual, the crypto holder, needs to make sure that they understand this and comply with the local tax regulations.
And I'm sure yourself as an exchange, as other exchanges that I engage with, sort of stockbrokers and the like, I mean, I can get the statements downloaded for the particular tax year. I don't have to go back and look at every single, find all my notifications around transactions and the like. The statements will be online for downloading.
Absolutely. You know, you can log onto your profile, you can download your crypto statements. And we usually say, you know, I think it's a general rule of thumb that keep onto your records for a period of 5 years.
Yeah.
I've read that SARs actually, they can go back further if they choose to. But that's also why it's advisable to always keep an online copy of all transactions that you've made over the years, just for safekeeping.
Yeah, and these days they're digital. I think I have them going back as far as forever, just because they're digital. It's no longer pieces of paper. Christo De Wit, South Africa Country Manager, Luno, appreciate the time as always. That's it for today. We were chatting with Skulk Lowe on Friday from PSG Old Oak. We're in update season. In a week or three, it'll start becoming results season. But with Skulk, I was chatting Premier Food. I was chatting Mondi. And, of course, the horror Arsenal Mittal update. We had suggested they were the good, the bad, the ugly. We asked what you thought was the best of the three. 40% said Mondi, I've got to say. I suppose it was in some senses. The market seemed to mark it down, but that seemed a bit rough. Another 40% said nope, none of the ones for you. The rest was split between Premier Food Group and Arsenal Mittal. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Norbochle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. If you're loving the show, please leave us a positive rating and an awesome review in your podcatcher of choice. We'll chat again tomorrow, knowing your market.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now. On the money.